daughter. His eyes glowed almost as brightly as the lightning. "Now there's a power," he said, "harnessing the lightning, the dream of mankind." The unnamed boat surged forward.
"Is it? It's not my dream," said Didactylos. "I always dream of a giant carrot chasing me through a field of lobsters."
"I mean metaphorical dream, master," said Urn.
"What's a metaphor?" said Simony.
Brother said, "What's a dream?" A pillar of lightning laced the mist. Secondary lightning sparked off the spinning globe.
"You could get it from cats," said Urn, lost in a philosophical world as the boat left a white wake behind it. "You stroke them with a rod of amber, and you get tiny lightnings. If I could magnify that a million times, no man would ever be a slave again, and we could catch it in jars and do away with the night."
Lightning struck a few yards away.
"We're in a boat with a large copper ball in the middle of a body of salt water," said Didactylos.
"Thanks, Urn."
"And the temples of the gods would be magnificently lit, of course," said Urn quickly.
Didactylos tapped his stick on the hull.
"It's a nice idea, but you'd never get enough cats," he said.
The sea surged up.
"Jump into the water," Om shouted.
"Why?" said Brother.
A wave almost overturned the boat. Rain hissed on the surface of the sphere, sent up a scalding spray.
"I haven't got time to explain. Jump overboard, it's for the best. Trust me."
Brother stood up, holding the sphere's framework to steady himself.
"Sit down," said Urn. "I'm just going out," said Brother. "I may be some time."
The boat rocked under him as he half-jumped, half-fell into the boiling sea. Lightning struck the sphere. As Brother bobbed to the surface, he saw for a moment the globe glowing white-hot, and the unnamed boat, its screw almost out of the water, skimming away through the mists like a comet. It vanished in the clouds and rain. A moment later, above the noise of the storm, there was a muffled boom. Brother raised his hand. Om broke the surface, blowing seawater out of his nostrils.
"You said it would be for the best," screamed Brother.
"Well, we're still alive, and hold me out of the water. Tortoises can't swim."
"But they might be dead."
"Do you want to join them?"
A wave submerged Brother. For a moment, the world was a dark green curtain ringing in his ears.
"I can't swim with one hand," he shouted as he broke surface again.
"We'll be saved. She wouldn't dare."
"What do you mean?"
Another wave slapped at Brother, and suction dragged at his robes.
"Om?"
"Yes."
"I don't think I can swim."
Gods are not very introspective. It has never been a survival trait. The ability to cajole, threaten, and terrify has always worked well enough. When you can flatten entire cities at a whim, a tendency towards quiet reflection and seeing things from the other fellow's point of view is seldom necessary. Which had led across the multiverse to men and women of tremendous brilliance and empathy, devoting their entire lives to the service of deities who couldn't beat them at a quiet game of dominoes. For example, Sister Sestina of Quirm defied the wrath of a local king and walked unharmed across a bed of coals and propounded a philosophy of sensible ethics on behalf of a goddess whose only real interest was in hairstyles. And Brother Zephylite of Clatch left his vast estates and his family and spent his life ministering to the sick and poor on behalf of the invisible god Furum, generally considered unable, should he have a backside, to find it with both hands. Should he have hands. Gods never need to be very bright when there are humans around to be it for them. The Sea Queen was considered fairly dumb, even by other gods. But there was a certain logic to her thoughts as she moved deep below the storm-tossed waves. The little boat had been a tempting target. But here was a bigger one, full of people, sailing right into the storm. This one was fair game. The Sea Queen had the attention span of an onion bargee. And by and large, she created her own sacrifices. And she believed in quantity. The Fin of God plunged from wave crest to wave trough, the gale tearing at its sails. The captain fought his way through the waist-high water to the prow, where Vorbis stood clutching the rail, apparently oblivious to the fact that the ship was wallowing half-submerged.
"Sir, we must reef sail! We can't outrun this!"
Greenfire cried.